So let's analyze. I wanted to start by analyzing that pasuk. Let's analyze the pasuk, which, because we need to understand exactly what this was, and we'll see a bit of a difference between the Gemara, how the Gemara phrases this, and how the way the Mefarshim explain this. So the Torah tells us right here, Vayidur Yiftach LaHashem Leimor. Vayidur Yiftach LaHashem Vayomar. Im Nason Titein Es B'nei Amon Biadi. So he makes a neder, and he says, if you will deliver Amon into my hands, V'haya, now look at this pasuk, and you tell me what he's saying. And it shall be that when I come home, and whatever comes out of the doors of my house, likrasi, to greet me, bishuvi b'shalom mibnei Amon, when I come to return in peace from Amon, vaya lahashem, v'ha'alisiu le'ola, will belong to God, and I will bring it as a korban. I will bring it as an ola. Now, what do you think he is saying? What is your interpretation of this pasuk?
Sounds like he's saying I'll sacrifice my children if they come to greet me.
Well, he doesn't say the word children, Ethan. He just says whatever comes into the house, right? Children's not there. I understand where you're coming from, because that's, we know what happens in the story, but he, right, that word is not necessarily used. But you're saying it's a little bit unsafe or dangerous.
No, right.
Reckless would be the right word.
Right.
But since you can redeem a carbon or an animal for a carbon, you can, you know, give the value of whoever comes into the house.
Excellent. So what Yossi's saying is the way that the Malbim and the Radak understand this pasuk, as not as reckless as Chazal learned it. The Malbim says here on the side, sorry, one second. Oh, Vahayal Hashem. So you go back to the pasuk, the Navi says, when I return safely from Amon, Vayal Hashem. So what could it be? It could be Vayal Hashem. V'ha'aliseu le'ola. V'k can mean, and I will bring this as a korban. Or the vav can mean, or I will bring it as a korban. Meaning, in place of. So the Malbim writes here, Perish, O she'yel Hashem. Imhu bilti ra'oi le'korban. If the thing that comes through my house first is not a cow, or a sheep for that matter, then, and it's not fit for korban, then I'm going to bring in its stead a korban. Oh, imhu ra'ui l'korban, but if this is something that's brought you for korban, I will bring that as a korban. That's what the Malbim says explicitly, right? You can understand also we have this concept called erchin, that erchi alai, I'm going to bring the value of me to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what he could say, the value of me. And that's not a problem. We do that. That's a psukim in the Torah, in Parshas Bichukosai, that talk about that. So that's the way the Malbim explains it. And the Radak basically says the same idea. This is more like what Yossi said precisely, that you could just bring the value of this as a korban, and that's not a problem, right? So we'll see if that's what happens. But, we'll see exactly what happens, but we don't need to interpret it like we saw the Gemara in Tanis last week, which said that three people did something inappropriate, something dangerous or reckless. That was Eliezer, Shmuel, and Yiftach. Two were answered correctly anyway. Eliezer, Rivka came, even though she could have been somebody else. And by Shmuel also. But here, his daughter ultimately is going to come through the door. Yeah, Jules. Jules, you're muted, Jules.
I'm sorry. It has to be a human being that he's making, isn't it? An animal's not going to go into his house.
Right.
So basically, he knows it's a human being. How can you make a nether like that? Even if he intends to bring a carbon in place of a child.
Right. It could be. I don't know. I thought of that too. Maybe not. You know, it depends on the culture back then. It might have been a normal thing for animals to be moving in and out of homes. You know, it's not something that we can relate to, but if you live in a field and you live in a certain, you know, rural area of the country, maybe it's not a crazy thing for an animal to come through. And even if it is, he's going to say, I'm going to give the value of this korban.
Rabbi Malkowitz?
Yeah.
The same type of a nether was made by Shaul, a foolish nether that no one should eat or drink. And Jonas didn't know about it. And he did.
Right.
He proclaimed a fast for the entire combat unit that he had. Jonas was not there. He didn't know about it. So he did eat. He wanted to do away with them. And they said, you can't do that.
Yeah, Rabbi Lapp is making a good point. I think. Really, what everybody is saying, I think, if maybe I can tell me if I'm misinterpreting your words, Rabbi Lapp and Jules, is that it's unsafe or it's not a best practice to make nedarim like this. Even though we can interpret it in a safer, more appropriate way that's not dangerous, it is not the best idea. And maybe that's something that we see as a reckless thing that Yiftach did ultimately. So now what happens? Now they go to war. Vayvor Yiftach al b'nei Amon lilachem bam v'yitzneim Hashem b'yado. They win. Vayakem me'arer ad bo'acha minis esrim ir ad avel kramim makag dolam od v'yikanu b'nei Amon l'b'nei b'nei Yisrael. They destroy them. He really flies through like 20 cities. You know, think about like the Six-Day War. Like immediately they knock out these cities. It is a huge victory for the Jewish people. Now let's look what happens afterwards. Like, that's like the side point here. What's interesting is like, really, why'd they bring Yiftach in? They brought Yiftach in to win a war. And there was a whole... We discussed this when we're in the social hall. Hol tzitzuch, are you going to be the leader? We don't want you to be we want you to be just one of the guys. And he said, I'm only coming if I'm going to be the Rosh. And like the main part of the story should have been the war. Yet there becomes like this major plot, this dramatic problem that arises because of Yiftach's actions. Vayavo Yiftach hamitzpah el beso. So now Yiftach comes home. V'hine bito yotzeis likraso. And his daughter comes to visit him. Abba came home from war. I'm going to go see him. I haven't seen him in some time. Bitupim uvim cholos. I'm going to make a party for him. She brings the drums and dancing. Rakhi yechida. Now the Navi is like telling us about this girl. Who is this daughter of Yiftach? He Yechida. What does that mean? She's Yechida. She's the only child. Ein lo mimenu, bein ubas. Ein lo mimenu. The Mefarshim point out here, it should be ein lo mimena. So it doesn't mean that she doesn't have children, but he doesn't have any other children except for her. So why does a Navi need to tell us twice? Number one, the Navi says she's a bas yechida. She's the only child. And then, by the way, he doesn't have any more children. That seems to be like unnecessary over here.
He doesn't have any other wives.
He doesn't. So why the redundancy in the pasuk?
Because the first thing is that she was the only daughter from one wife, and he didn't have any children because he only had only one wife.
Ah, so listen, so possibly. So maybe it's like really stressing that issue that he has one wife, where it's more common to have more. So the Radak makes a very interesting suggestion. The Radak suggests ki efsher shahaya haya le'eshes Yiftach banim ishacher. It could be that Yiftach's wife was married previously, and she had children. Kodim shenises Yiftach before she married Yiftach, and Yiftach raised those children as his own. He took care of the children. Aval mimenu lo haya lo ben obas ki imzos. But that's what the Torah is saying. That's what Navi is saying. She was a bas yechida. Yeah, Yiftach had other kids in his house that he took care of and he treated as his own. But the only biological child that he shared with his wife is just one. There is only one child. That is the way that the Radak understands this. And the Malbim writes something a little bit different. Ki yikra yachid gam im yesh lomar banim acherim she'inim chashuvim etzlom. So he says that maybe he did have other children, but he did not consider them as significant. Right? This is important because just keep in mind Yiftach's backstory. Now he was kicked out of the house because he had his mother was different than the other children. Right? So what does the Malbim write? That it could be that he had other kids that were from Palakshin. And that's, he does not consider them his children like he considers this one his child. What's interesting here is that you see two opposite approaches between the Radak and the Malbim in general. Like, let's leave the story about the Neder for a minute. And think about this, about how psychologically affected Yiftach was by being raised in a home where he was different. His mother was different, and they give a different interpretation to how his mother was different. She was different. Therefore, the brothers ultimately kicked him out of the house. So how does that affect somebody many years later? To say it doesn't affect anybody ever, that's false. It has to affect people. Anything that happens in our childhood affects us, positively, negatively, it just affects us. So the Radak writes, it affected him in a very beautiful way. He is more sympathetic and more open to have kids that were not from his wife, not from him, live in his house, and he treated them like his own. Right? So he, from that very difficult childhood that he had, he gained a tremendous amount from. And he was able to make that a positive, in his life. Whereas the Malbim is saying, it's like history repeating itself. That's the way he was treated. He felt horrible about it. He was kicked out of his house, but sometimes hurt people. And he almost, like, he had Palakshim also. They weren't treated the same way as everybody else. So whatever, and you see this all the time with, trauma that happens in a young age, how people can use that as a guiding light to make sure that it never happens to anybody ever again. And others really can't get by it. And even though it hurt them so much, they don't know another path or chart forward in terms of their life without doing this. This is the only way they know life. And they're going to continue to continue that narrative in their adulthood as well. So you see like very different, two different approaches from the Radak and Malbim about, what happens when you have a trauma in, early age in your life. Yeah, Mendy.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we just talked about the effect of Yishmael had on Yitzhak when he got thrown out, how that affected him.
Yeah.
I think with Esav.
100%. I think it's very similar. What do you do when that happens earlier? So the best of the best are able to then, I create an organization to save people and help people and to heal people. Or I do this in my own home. There's a third interpretation here, which I think takes us in a positive way a step further. The third interpretation is that he had adopted children. It wasn't that his wife was married previously, but that he sought out in his life to adopt children. He adopted kids because he had his heart went out to kids that were thrown out of their homes, kids that didn't have parents, kids that parents couldn't take care of them, kids that, were on the streets. And that was who he was. He was that kid that was on the streets. And what do you do for those kids? He said, they're going to live in my home. So that's amazing. Right? That's amazing if one could take, which nobody should have the trauma that you have to have.
Rabbi,
if you're going to have that trauma, What's that going to mean for you moving forward? Yes, Rabbi Lapp. Rabbi Lapp?
Neder like that should certainly be bottled. It has no value to make a neder on someone else's life. Just because you made a neder, you're going to kill someone?
Yeah.
Is that a neder that would be acceptable? Of course not.
Correct. Yeah, the neder. So that's, we'll see that play itself out. Okay, we'll see it play itself out very, very shortly.
So, Rabbi, further on Rabbi Lapp's question, yeah. You have to say when he was saying this, it wasn't his intent to do this. Sometimes you're thinking something, and you have to say what he was thinking. It was definitely to do it with an animal. And then when you say it, you're not very careful with your words. So when you make a neder and you're saying one thing, but you're thinking something a little bit different, what's the value of your neder? Are you stuck with that neder, even though your thought is not what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a concept in the Darim, which is the following. I'll tell you how it plays out in the story. The famous Rabbi Akiva. You know, you think, I'm not going to go around the Zoom room today and ask you who had trouble with their father-in-law when you first got married, but Rabbi Kiva had trouble with his father-in-law when he first got married. Rabbi Kiva was an ignoramus. He didn't know any Torah, and his daughter was a stellar, went to the best and finest Jewish institutions around. And now Rabbi Kiva's father-in-law was a man named Kalba Sabu, who was extremely, extremely wealthy and influential in the Jewish community. And here his daughter, who went to the best and best yeshivas and seminaries, is marrying a guy who knows nothing. So he tells Rachel, his daughter, if you marry her, you're not getting any money from me. You're getting nothing from me. I will not help you out. And they lived in extreme and dire poverty for many, many years. Rachel told her father, this man has potential. He will become somebody great. He will become somebody great. You will see one day. He made a neder. He was matir neder that his daughter and son-in-law cannot get benefit from any of their property. Okay. After the 20 years, he learned Torah. Part of that story was right after Rabbi Akiva says to all the students that everything that I have and everything that my students have belongs to her. The father came. That's the part two. We don't tell this part of the story, but part two of the story is the father said, take whatever you want. So the Rishonim say there, that's not allowed. He made a neder saying that, right? Again, an unsaved, why do that? You know, just say it if you don't have comfortable. You have to make a neder. So the Rishonim say, because there's a concept in a neder called that if you only knew this at the time that you made the neder, you wouldn't have done it. So there is, if he only knew that Rabbi Akiva would become Rabbi Akiva, he would not have made the neder to begin with. Therefore, you go to a Talmud Chacham, that's what you need to do, and you can undo the neder. You can undo the neder. So it's called Pesach for a neder. It's an opening to undo the neder. So here too, we'll see, can he make a Pesach to undo this nether? Like, why is that not something that he can do?
Rabbi.
Yeah, Milti, go ahead.
What? To make a nether, when you say something, I don't think I'm going to do this, and then you do it anyway, that wasn't really a nether.
No, that's not a nether. No, no.
So, if he said, Rabbi Kiva's father said, Kiva's wife's father said, you're not going to get anything. He didn't say, I'm making a neder, I'm not going to do this. He didn't use that language either, did he?
So the language in the Gemara is that he made a neder. You don't need to make a neder in front of other people. Presumably he did. What? He's not your neder. He mamish made a neder.
How do you make a neder? What language do you use to make a neder?
You say, I'm making a neder.
Oh, you're actually saying, I'm making a neder.
Yeah. There's a big discussion if you use other language that is a common.
Do you need Adam? You need to Adam or you don't?
You should let people know. It should be informed this way people know. But a neder can be done without Adam. that he did.
Neder is always on David Hafter, whereas the Shua is on Gavra.
Correct. Yeah. Correct, Rabbi Lab. Yeah. The Hafter versus the Gavra. Yeah, correct.
What about Yom Kippur night? Yomata all the Nadarm.
Therefore what?
Therefore didn't apply anymore after the first Yom Kippur.
So he probably was so baroyez about his son-in-law that he said chutz mizeh. It doesn't need to apply to things that you don't apply it to. And in fact, what is recommended when it comes to Atar Sedarim, some of these things happen so fast and it's not the right time that you don't talk about like the halachic aspects of this. So somebody should say at Atar Sedarim, if there was an explicit neder that you made, that you made an explicit neder, you should, and you don't want to do that anymore, you need to say that. You need to explicate that at the time. And if you don't, it could be that it doesn't count for that. It's a very generic thing. You know, it's a very, Hataras Nedarim is very, it's very long, but it specifies all different types of Nedarim, but it's very generic. But so if there was something that you did, for example, like I started to do this mitzvah in a certain way. I started to wear a gartel and I stopped. So maybe you're matir neder that you made a neder that like you should
daven. You have to use the word neder.
No, not always. It's a more complicated topic in terms of what else would constitute a nether. Sometimes an action, doing an action more than three times would constitute an automatic nether.
Going to early minion Friday night.
Oh boy. Okay, there. Mendy's plugging. If you need a minion for early Friday night minion, Mendy's going to, it's called the Lishma Shabbos minion beginning next week. When Minyan will begin at 2:00 on Friday afternoon.
If you do it three times, then you have to do, you gotta do something about it.
So the truth is there are tshuvos about that, Mendy, and there's a difference. If you're doing it just for convenience purposes, then you don't need to be out there neither because you're not doing it for the mitzvah. Again, it's a benefit of it, but it's also helpful. It's convenient for a lot of people to make early Shabbos, so it doesn't necessarily count as a neither.
Bye-bye.
Yes,
wasn't this the basis of Rabbi Rachman's ruling that a marriage would be invalid if the bride had known ahead of time that the husband was going to act in a certain way?
Oh boy, yeah, Nathan's getting into a major, a very fascinating discussion about Rabbi Emanuel Rachman. It's not based in the Durim, but it's based on the same concept that one of the issues related to, or one, you know, everyone's trying to solve the Aguna crisis about how it's horrific that men decide they're going to hold the get over their wives and they're not going to divorce them without getting everything that they want. It's horrible. Everybody, you should tell your children, your grandchildren, they must sign a prenup. They must. And I sign a ksuva when I'm a Messiah Kedushin. I sign a prenup. I won't do without it. And one, Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, who's a tremendous Talmid Chacham, actually know his grandson pretty well. He suggested doing something called Hafkas Kedushin. Hafkas Kedushin is Mishnayos and Mesechas Kedushin. Let's talk about the following scenario, Nathan, where you marry somebody and then you realize they're like a criminal, or they are mentally incapable of anything. And it was a complete and utter ruse. It was like a mechachtos. So there we say, again, it's a very complicated sugya, but you can undo the Kiddushin, what we call today in English an annulment, where it was like they were never married. It's a big problem if there are children, because then who do those children belong to? And that's like a big issue. And if they were intimate together, then if there was never a marriage and that intimacy is considered as nus, there are a lot of complications to that, but that's something that he brought forward that maybe in a case where you didn't know this guy would be such an oislarf that he would use this to threaten, bribe, and blackmail a woman, then maybe this could be used. It was rejected by a lot of Rabbanim, on not because he had bad intent, he had the best of intentions, for a lot of different halachic reasons, this was ultimately rejected. Okay, it bears a longer discussion about why it was rejected, but thank you for bringing it up. So the same idea. If I would have known, then, so it's not always so simple if that really works. I know of one case where Rabbi Willig did use that to matir an aguna. Because the difference is, if there was an annulment, then that aguna can marry a kohen. But if ultimately they get divorced with the get, then that aguna cannot marry a kohen. Right? That's a very important halacha. We're dealing with deraisas here. So let's just learn one more pasuk. Vayavo yiftach hamitzvah. Oh, sorry. So she came. Good. Vayikir osa osa. So now Yiftach sees his daughter coming to the house, and he did not forget this neder. What does he do right away? Vayikras begadav. He tears his clothing. Vayomer aha, biti hachreya hichritani. She's brought me very low. Va'at hayisa be'ochrai. And she is now going to be the source of my troubles. Va'anochi patzisi es pi el Hashem. Because I opened up my mouth to Hashem. Lo uchal lashuv. And I cannot go back. I cannot go back. So now, like, what is he saying? Because we just said that maybe he could matir neder. We just said he could do other things. So why is it not happening? Matom Reilav, Avi, and she says to him, Avi patzisas picha Hashem, you opened your mouth up to Hashem. Asei li kasher yatzami picha. You should do like you said. Acharei asher asa lecha Hashem nekamos ma'ivecha b'nei Amon. Hashem kept up his end of the bargain and helped you win the war. Therefore, you should keep up your end of the bargain and you should follow through with what you said. Whoa. That's huge. So I'll leave you off with one medrash. One second. One medrash, which he's going to get us into a very different discussion. Very, very important. So Medrash writes, here it is. Hayayachol v'yikuraba. Hayayachol l'hafer es nidro v'leilich es l'pinchas. If not to your nether, you need to go to the Gadol Hador or to a mumcha in Nidara. Pinchas was alive back then. And we're not going to get into Pinchas is alive. I thought Pinchas, he's like 1,000 years old, right? Okay, that we could leave off for now. But he could have went to Pinchas to matter this neder. Amar ani melech, I'm a king. I'm the shofet. And I should go to Pinchas? Pinchas amar ani kohen gadol, uven kohen gadol, elech etzalam ha'aretz. So he says, I'm not going to go to Pinchas. I'm a chashav guy. I'm the shofet. Pinchas should come to me. Pinchas probably heard about this. And Pinchas says, I'm the Navi. I'm the Kohen Gadol. He should come to me. I shouldn't go to him. Out of excessive pride, the neder was never undone. He refused to go. He was too prideful about what he did. Maybe he was ashamed about what he did, and he refused to go.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
I think this gives us a little light when negotiation of becoming the Rosh, going back and forth, what his personality really is about.
Yeah.
This brings more light to that.
It does say a lot about it. It does say a lot about it. We'll have to go into this more and see really what happened to her. He can't kill her. Like that's off the table. That can't, like, to literally be a korban, that's definitely not allowed. But what happens to her? And you see that she is invested in him fulfilling his neder. Appropriate, not appropriate. That's really what she said. So we need to understand that also.
Rabbi, with Chana, she made a neder also with Shmuel, no? Like to give it, like to give her son to Hashem.
Correct.
For carbon. So could you do something like that similar to this? I mean, it has to be a carbon, but you could dedicate your life in a certain way.
Yeah, it's a great question. Okay, let's talk about it next week. We'll talk on Monday, Ezra Hashem. Okay.
Okay.
I sincerely apologize about the late start. And
there's one more thing.
Baruch Hashem, Simchas, and we'll learn tomorrow. Five to
don't
go.
Don't forget today. Today
we have later today. Double Markowitz time. Sarah will be at 12:10 today. What time is lunch start?
Lunch starting at 11:45. We have a reservation. And also, here, if you're coming on Zoom, you can catch Dr. Sarah Markowitz at 12:10 on Zoom as well.
Great. Okay. Have a great day. Looking forward.
Shkaya, thank you. Have a good day.